listening to Two Sons of Tatooine. If there's a bright center to the universe, you're listening to the podcast that it's farthest from. And here are your hosts, Jonathan and Nathan.
All right, so to begin this second episode of Two Sons of Tatooine, I am, of course, Jonathan Cohn, your host. I am joined by Nathan and P. Bro, and we will be talking about on this episode Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and the Master and Apprentice relationship, as well as how it relates to the Jedi as a whole, specifically in Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. So, Nathan, do you want to go ahead and start with your first topic?
Sure. So, I guess one of my leading off points, one of my jumping off points is, I really feel like, and we can talk about this, the Senate, more than the Republic, was the, let's say, the charge of the Jedi. They served the Senate, and this time, I think it would probably be, you know, developed quite a bit before then, but, you know, you had a great look at this recently in Rebels when we had the, you know, the talk about a peacekeeper, you know, with Ahsoka bringing that up, but the Jedi had become subservient in a lot of way to the corruption of the Senate. And I would say the place that they were in, you know, bound to tradition, maybe you'd agree with that. A lot of traditionalists, yeah. Mace Windu probably comes to mind first and foremost. But the state of the Jedi was outwardly, everything is great. Everything is solid. High Council's in good shape. You know, there's thousands of knights. And yet, you know, on a practical side, you know, you start to already see some of the corruption in the Senate being laid. The forefront is being laid for things to topple. And, you know, just the foundation of it isn't as solid as it would outwardly appear. So that kind of leads me into some of the duality, right? The duality of really one of the themes that we see in Episode 1. And one of those themes is the living force versus the council, versus the wisdom or their collective decision-making and things like that. What do you think so far about like that? When you look at that duality, do you feel like that's something that we see right away in Episode 1?
Yeah, it is interesting. It's not necessarily right away. You pick up it up more when you're looking at the Jedi Council when you get on Coruscant.
Right.
And of course, it's interesting that they have their headquarters on Coruscant because that's the capital city. And obviously, that's where they get assigned to go to places by the Senate, and that's who they serve. And it makes sense. And it's interesting looking at how it's essentially a slippery slope. To where when the Jedi started out, their whole purpose is helping people make the right choices. And then it became, oh, we are keepers of the peace and we have to serve with the Senate, because they believed that having a stable government was more crucial than necessarily whether that was a good government in and of itself. And so their focus changed from doing the right thing to stopping necessarily a worse thing from happening. And so they wanted to keep the stability, and that's why they were co-opted into the judicial department, where they simply went around stopping disputes between worlds. They'd rather have perhaps a bad or not great leader in that world who stays in the Republic than have these kind of separatist type people who would break off more. And that's what you see with the whole Naboo crisis in Episode 1. They're trying to mediate it, obviously, and Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan are on the side of Padme and of the Nabooans, but it's, you know, it's very tenuous. And so I like that you see that slippery slope, and as you were talking about, eventually get into the Clone Wars era and Episode 2 and Episode 3, and it becomes that they realize, oh, we just need to keep this together to the point that we'll actually fight. We will change our values from being people who do what's right to people who try to prevent war to people who are doing war to protect the Republic. And so it's just interesting seeing that dissension. And it's, you know, it's a pretty slow descent from point A to point B, but once they get to the point of just going into war. It's like a quick, okay, too late, we have to do this now. So it's quite I thought that was a quite interesting factor.
When I think about the fact that Yoda was, you know, on the council for 1,000 years, generally, mm-hmm. before this time, and all of the general, you know, all of the Jedi Knights that he must have known, all of the,
oh, yeah.
all of the, you know, changes in Supreme Chancellors, in, you know, in just in the, probably in the structuring of the Senate, and just his lifespan obviously lets him have this huge perspective that not many people get to have, and obviously he's respected, but how many times in the Clone War era, even in Episode One, do you find him erring on the side of the traditionalist, you know, where he didn't agree with taking Anakin as an apprentice? You know, he agrees a lot of times with Mace around things. It was just very interesting to me, but as I think about it, you're 20. Think about you've lived, let's say, 10 times as long, so you're 200. You know, and that's, you would have his age, relatively. You know, just, it would be, I think it's a little bit excusable because of how much could change and did not change in his whole life. He probably faced threats, but nothing like the true return of the Sith that we saw.
And looking at the, and Yoda specifically, is that he's quite an interesting case study because he really, I think, would have done everything in his power to stay out of the war. But
true.
Yoda believed in not having an autocracy and not being the head of the Jedi Order. And in fact, there were several times throughout the history where he kind of let other masters be more at the forefront. And even though he was the oldest and most experienced and wisest person on the council, he wasn't really the decision maker. And as we see in Episode 1, 2, and 3, much more of that falls into Mace Windu's lap. And you see that Yoda goes with the flow because he thinks that it's better to keep the Jedi together and unified than it is to hold to the most specific of principles. Because, and I think this is important, because if Yoda had been insistent that the Jedi be totally peaceful and pacifist, kind of like Mandalore and some of the Mandalorians at the beginning of the Clone Wars, who's going to lead that army? The clone army would not have been successful, I don't think, without the Jedi generals for them. And therefore, they wouldn't have been able to win the war or even do it well. And even though you got the Empire because of Anakin, I do not believe that it would have been better under the Separatists. I think the Separatists, even though they had some ideas that were good, they were also very explicitly ruled by some bad people, and they had bad information. So I don't, and even though they were angry at the corruption, they themselves were corrupt just in a different type of way. And so Yoda's, you know, even though he kind of had to cave a little on some of his core beliefs, it was much more about just trying to, essentially, as Black Widow says in The Avengers, keeping the family together. and I do appreciate that about his character.
That leads me to an interesting kind of question as a follow-up, or just observation, but isn't it brilliant that Sidious wins either way?
Yeah.
Separatists, because your point is that without the Jedi, the Republic might have been defeated. I think that's very likely. Would you think that end game is better for Sidious, with, I guess, all he has to do is take out, you know, the Separatist leaders, and, you know, probably Count Dooku is still alive. I don't know how it would turn out with Anakin, but he planned it in such a way that he would win whichever side it was. He was orchestrating. He was on the winning team, you know?
I think that he knew that no matter what he did, the Republic was going to win. He would purposefully drive the Separatists into the ground no matter what. And here's why. If the Separatists win, he is, in fact, the failed leader of the Republic who's taken down. And even if he reveals himself as the Sith, as the true person holding the strings, people still would have that, but you lost to the Separatists, in the back of their minds. And so by winning as the leader of the Republic, when he forms the Empire and joints it all together, he's the winning leader. And if people
he's the leader as himself. What if he?
Yeah.
What if he revealed himself as Sidious to the galaxy and abandoned the Palpatine? He could, you know, it. I guess it's the duality of, you know, I'm the Sith Lord, I'm Palpatine, but he could just annex in the Separatist afterwards and say, "You win." And he I'm sure that there was a brilliant plan. This probably somebody's out there thought this through, but go ahead.
The reason that wouldn't work, in my opinion, is because it would, in the public's view, in like in practicality, he could you know win either way, right? But he does like looking like a good leader, and he likes looking powerful. And if he made his team that he was publicly for, even though he was on both sides, and even though he could reveal that he was the Sith Lord pulling the strings for the Separatists, he was publicly the leader, the ground game leader of the Republic. And for him to lose that and then consolidate afterwards, it would just, people wouldn't have respect for him or even really the fear of him necessarily, I don't think. Hmm. But by being the leader of the Republic who defeats the Separatists, then right. They find out, oh, he was pulling the strings. I don't think you lose the respect in that case. So that's why I think that's important.
Not having thought about it, it was an interesting trail of thought, but you're probably right that he chose the Republic to win, because you see many times where information gets leaked, you know, oh, we found such and such Separatist leader, or, you know, we found this outpost or whatnot. Things that Sidious himself would know that Palpatine might have leaked or, you know, have planned that he could orchestrate to whichever side he wanted to win it, to rig it. So I think, yeah, he would have probably chosen the Republic to win. He just, whatever best suited his outcomes. Anyway, mm-hmm. I guess we got off on that because of the political angle of, you know, the...
Oh, yeah, of the Jedi, which is important.
It is.
You know, politics in Star Wars, some people hate it, some people like us love it, but it's very important to understanding the base arguments. And political philosophy also is very integral into moral philosophy, which I really liked. But I wanted to... We'll go ahead and go on to our next topic, which I'll bring up this one, is moving a little bit into the philosophy of what does a Jedi do? It's kind of similar to the last one, but, you know, one of my favorite scenes in the prequels is the "you want to go home and rethink your life" scene from episode 2, because it's showing Obi-Wan simply helping a guy make the right decisions. Yeah, he's kind of manipulating him, but he specifically says, rethink your life. And he's trying to get the guy to come up on his own to decide, hey, maybe selling death sticks is not the smartest move. And you see, before I think in the High Republic, the new book series that's coming out, we're going to see the turn where the Jedi turn from just helping people out to something big happens and they say, we got to united and prevent this thing from happening. And they say, hey, that's when the snap happens that, hey, we should change our policy a little bit. And so I'm interested to see the Jedi pre-High Republic, see how they are written at the beginning of that. But also you see that, you know, in episode 1, even though they're trying to do trade disputes, there's little things like freeing the slaves on
exactly. I was about to think
on Tatooine.
Yeah,
you know, it's a laudable goal, and it's something that the Jedi should be cognizant of. And when Qui-Gon leaves, he doesn't seem to think, I need to come back for these people. Yes, this is important. This is also, but the freeing the slaves is also important. He doesn't think that. He thinks, I got the chosen one. I don't need to free the slaves. It's not on my radar screen. And so these smaller injustices don't matter to the Jedi as much. And so they cave on that. And so even though Qui-Gon is one of my favorite Jedis, even he's flawed because he doesn't ever return. And even though Padme does,
well, he dies, book, so.
Well, yeah, he does die. But even then, he was like, it's obvious. He was a very one-track mind person, and he had that focus. And Padme did have compassion, and she did try to go and free Shmi Skywalker in the book Queen's Shadow. She tried to do that, but she wasn't able to find Shmi, and so she kind of gave up the search for her and didn't even try to free the rest of the slaves, even though she herself, a politician, was outraged by the idea of slavery. She doesn't even do that much. to help publicly to stop slavery in the Outer Rim. So it's showing that it's not just the Jedi who were given up their moral high ground. It was all across the board. Even the politicians were also doing that as well. Even the good ones, as Padme is supposed to be described.
Right.
And so I think it's interesting that, you know, specifically with Tatooine, that in Obi-Wan, it didn't even seem to bother him. It was more an inconvenience having to deal with the slaves than it was a moral atrocity.
Oh, for sure. Episode 1, Obi-Wan felt that way. But so when you think about Anakin, like his response to Qui-Gon showing up, obviously his first thought is he's here to rescue me. Like he's there to free the slaves on our whole planet. Mm-hmm. So his mindset is revealed. The Jedi are all peacekeepers. Mm-hmm. They're the heroic, larger-than-life good guy that his imagination has built them up to be. And, you know, Qui-Gon is here to do this. Well, in reality, he's obviously not. Qui-Gon does, because of his, you know, quote-unquote, the living force, he's much more dedicated to that. So, whereas you mentioned Obi-Wan was kind of, just bothered, almost irritated of this obstacle.
Yeah.
Qui-Gon was, you know, he cared. He did care. But at the same time, like you said, it had become so foreign to them that they did not immediately think, you know, this is a real issue that we need to spend time and resources to come back and fix. You know, they moved right back to the Senate politics, which obviously the corruption in the Senate was like, you know, that's like today's politics. It's nonstop, you know, eating each other, and just it was a war on all fronts. But
it is interesting that, you know, Anakin essentially has this really good bright-eyed view of the Jedi. So he starts out as the most pure you can get when it comes to the Jedi, and then all of a sudden, in the span of 13 years between episode 1 and episode 3, he just goes completely downhill into being so disappointed in the Jedi, and so, you know, not really believing in it, and so just mired in the, hey, I need to just do what I can to survive and to do what I think helps. So he cares about Padme, and he cares about Ahsoka, and he cares kind of about Obi-Wan. And other than that, it's like,
he didn't go back. Tatooine slaves, they're still waiting on Anakin. The ones that he said, I will come back and free all of you. So whatever the Jedi taught him in that time, it numbed him. It made him literally so consumed with all the other cares and concerns of Coruscant life and politics and power and whatever it was, success, being a master. You know, obviously being a master was elevated in his mind. Mm-hmm. That was the best of the best. And I know there's some reasons, you know, forbidden knowledge, that's a big part of it. But
yeah,
whatever those things were, they clouded his vision so much that this guy that was, like you said, the most pure, the most caring, into what we saw in episode 2, which was just this whiny, you know, constantly complaining, Obi-Wan, I see you facepalming. I mean, I feel you. He was unbearable. His attitude, anyway, was just stinky. So that shows a lot about probably the problems within the Jedi Order's training and the things that they emphasized as being important.
And that's not to say that there weren't great Jedi. In fact, I still think that the Jedi are a good group to be emulated, and I do think that you really, like, the viewer should have respect and view them as heroes, but flawed heroes who have, you know, minor problems. Because even when the Jedi as an order is at their worst, I still think they're way better than the Sith at their best. And so it kind of gets into this kind of lesser of two evils. If you view the Jedi and Sith almost like you view politics, it's okay. Yeah, I don't think either candidate is the best candidate for the job, but the Jedi are way better at getting stuff done, and I agree with them a lot more of the time than I do with the Sith. I'm never gonna find that group of people, like the political group, like the Jedi or the Sith, that are 100% gonna line up with my views. Maybe there is, you know, because Star Wars is huge, there's maybe some really minor faction, but that faction's not going to get traction galaxy-wide, so you have to make some compromises and say, okay, I don't agree with all the Jedi on everything, but I'll go along with it because I think they're, you know, overall pretty good. And I think that that's what a lot of the Jedi, including Ahsoka for a while, was thinking, and then, you know, she had some other things that she had to deal with that. But that's why I think, like, Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, and others all stay in the Jedi Order and not try to form their own thing, because they think, even though the Jedi have flaws, Sith flaws are way worse.
Right. There have been splits. I know there have. You know, the Peacekeepers is the one that comes to mind. They split off from the Jedi thinking, you know, hey, we're leaving this. And I'm not sure what time that was, but within the scale. But as far as, like, the structuring of the council, and just the Jedi as a whole, but it goes back to the top, right? It starts at the top. And, you know, Yoda having a lot of authority, Mace having a lot of authority. Yoda assigned apprentices himself. You didn't get to choose kind of your own. And I know that was probably frowned upon by a few. Obviously, Qui-Gon, because he's, you know, I want to train Anakin. I guess it worked out with Obi-Wan, but go ahead.
It's interesting with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, because in the book Master and Apprentice, it goes into how, you know, at first Qui-Gon didn't necessarily want to train Obi-Wan. It was kind of thrust upon him. But once he started training Obi-Wan, he wanted to do the right thing. And when Obi-Wan makes the line, if you only, you know, agreed with the council, you'd be on the council or something like that. You know, in Master and Apprentice, Qui-Gon is offered a council seat, but it comes at the expense of him training Obi-Wan. And they said, if you take the council seat, he has to transfer to someone else.
And yeah, that line is, Master, you'd be sitting on the council by now if you would just follow the code.
Yeah. And it's interesting that he was offered it and he declined it, not necessarily entirely because he disagreed with them on things, which he did, but it's also because he actually did grow to appreciate Obi-Wan and he wanted to shepherd his training to the end. And they had a real big communication problem in that book and also in other stories where, you know, Obi-Wan felt really insecure and felt that he couldn't do enough for Qui-Gon, and Qui-Gon felt really insecure that he couldn't be the leader, the mentor that Obi-Wan needed. And so in Phantom Menace, when they're going to the council and Qui-Gon just up and says, oh yeah, Obi-Wan's ready for the trials, I'll take on Anakin, Obi-Wan's kind of caught aback because they've had those communication problems, and both of them had kind of had that insecurity about themselves. And I just think that, you know, that really gets to the heart of almost like parenting. Like, it's really hard for parents to know exactly when they think their kid is ready to be trained enough for the real world. And it's also sometimes hard for kids to know if they're living up to what their parents want out of them.
As a parent, and I'm not a parent, but I would imagine that, you know, my kid, as much as I want them to make all of these choices just exactly the right way, if I don't let them make enough mistakes, well, they're obviously going to just, you know, be positioned differently and not understand why the reason behind the wisdom of my experience. And when you relate that to the relationship of that master apprentice thing, you realize, well, the master is being tested as much as the apprentice is. And indeed, and while yeah, he it is, yeah. while he or she being the master, like, while they are very, very largely responsible for the training, for the eventual quality of the Jedi that they produce, they're not solely responsible. No parent is responsible. A parent of a serial killer is not responsible for that serial killer. They did have a part to play. At some point, there were some things, but they could have done, for all I know, they could have done the best that they did, the best that they possibly could have. And yet, with the Jedi, you look at the Master Apprentice, there is definitely a reflection on, you know, on the Master. And the Apprentice is a reflection the same way. it goes both ways. But go ahead, where you said something.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say that when it comes to the master and apprentice relationship, it's that, you know, you, when you're working together, obviously you have to, you know, if one messes up, it's partially the other's fault because they were there. But at the same time, you think that, you know, with Obi-Wan, he kind of was seeing what was happening with Anakin, and maybe he could have done some things differently, but you can't really blame him for Anakin's fall to the dark side.
No.
And I think that Obi-Wan does, because, you know, every master and apprentice, even with in real life with parents and kids, if a kid, as you said, goes on to become a serial killer, the parent feels that obligation of, oh my goodness, what did I do wrong?
Right.
And so even though Obi-Wan did is just about as good as he could do, Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon are essentially the best that you see the Jedi at the time. So no one could have been a better teacher for Anakin, and yet it's still he still fell.
And
so
Anakin himself, a phenomenal teacher to Ahsoka, a Jedi that herself would stand among the same ranks as Obi-Wan. So Obi-Wan's failure as a master and, you know, Ahsoka's success as a student, relatively speaking, although she never, I guess, achieved Jedi Knight, but I think most of us view her as wise for having, you know, made some of the choices that she made, but, and we can talk about some of those in detail later, but it's very much a reflection while not being a full responsibility type of situation. And you have to give credit to each individual aspect. And one of those aspects is, you know, how do they submit to the council? Or do, you know, do they literally just kind of Obi-Wan it and follow everything blindly at first? In episode one, that's what he does, it seems like. Where constantly you're getting, you know, Qui-Gon telling him, be mindful of living, you know, right now, this type of, you know, the type of advice. Or, you know, so is it that view? Or is it kind of like where Anakin's with Ahsoka and he's like, you need to follow more the spirit of the council? You know, they told us not to do this, but, you know, the Jedi principles, they would want us to do this.
My favorite line in the Clone Wars regarding Anakin's teaching philosophy is when Obi-Wan and Anakin are at the Citadel and Snips, Ahsoka comes along, and he's just really mad at her for coming along, and Obi-Wan says, I guess that Anakin's new teaching method is do as I say, not as I do. And that is very much, that just encapsulates the entirety of Anakin's teaching style.
Oh yeah, he talks the best game, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, he does. He's like, you should have listened to me, Padawan. And I was like, I remember you not doing that with your master in a certain episode 2.
A certain episode 2. Obi-Wan, gosh, he calls him out so many times. He calls Anakin out, and it's hilarious when he does. But I'm thinking of, are you thinking of Star Wars Episode 2? Are you thinking of, like, one of the early episodes of the Clone Wars?
No. I'm thinking of in Star Wars Episode 2,
okay.
Attack of the Clones, when he's like, every time he says, my very young Padawan.
My very condescending young Padawan.
It's like, how many words can I throw in that are accurate and also very mean-spirited? Obi-Wan does that quite a bit in
Attack of the Clones. I was thinking, so Ahsoka, she speaks in front of the council, or I think it's one of the early episodes. She's like, hey, we really need to go rescue, and she doesn't know that they're alive, but these clones, and Master Plo's there. Obviously, she's connected to Plo because he found her, but, you know, she speaks up. Anakin's like, quiet, my young apprentice, you know, and then turns around and they board a ship and literally leave their troops and go do the rescue that Ahsoka said that they should do. And she's like, wait, what are we doing? He's like, well, you were wrong, but it's just the way that you went about telling the council that was wrong. We'll ask for forgiveness, you know. His actions with her shows so much, you know. And, well, what happens, right? You remember what happens?
Yeah.
They rescue the clone.
Yeah,
valuable intel, and they get Plo. They save, you know. Well, Anakin's not going to bat an eye. He's not going to lose one iota of sleep over that. And Ahsoka, what did she just learn? Ends justify the means. You know, and I think his quote, kind of Anakin's like, follow the spirit of the council. You know, his view is that obviously we should just go ahead and do it, and it'll all turn out okay. It'll all end up all right. And that's a theme in his character. Anakin, you know, it'll all be okay. I can pretty much do whatever I want to. And it leads to him becoming Vader.
Indeed. And it's that, you know, some of his actions, you wonder, was that the right move or was that the wrong move? Yes, he gathered intel, but he disobeyed orders. And he was very, you know, rude about it. And I think that Ahsoka was, you know, was kind of justified in the way that she was talking to the council. And I think that she was partially doing it right, because you want to present the problem, but you don't want to necessarily go against what their final decision is necessarily. Now, maybe he could contact, I think he should have contacted a third party. Like, he didn't know Hondo and Aka at that point, but someone like Hondo, and be like, okay, hey, can you go to this system and check for me? So that way he was still doing everything he was supposed to do. He did not defy them at all, but he still trusted his convictions and tried to help. But instead, he does deliberately disobey them, which I do think is a problem. But that is a very different discussion. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we will announce our topic for show number 3. All right, so Nathan, do you want to announce what our next topic is going to be?
Yes, sir. So, we're going to spend about an episode talking about the Siege of Mandalore, mm-hmm. the last 4 episodes of the Clone Wars, which just came out. We're all really excited about it. Jonathan, how many times have you seen those?
The whole episodes once. I've seen portions of them several times.
Okay. I've probably seen them 2 or 3 times, possibly more, in the parts. And obviously really excited because of how great they were. But mm-hmm. we'll dissect them. We'll obviously look at how they tie in with Revenge of the Sith. I know there's some great fan projects where they've actually worked to edit them in, and kind of it'll be neat to talk about those. What else? You going to close us out there, Jonathan?
Yeah. If you want to find us on Facebook, you can search for Two Sons of Tatooine. We have a good Facebook page with our profile on it. Also, I write book reviews for RokuDepot.com if you want to check those out. And then the email is JonathanDavidCohn@gmail.com if you want to send us any questions. But the best place to find us is on Facebook. We are on Simplecast, Stitcher, and soon to be Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. So we're really looking forward to all of that. But until next time, I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Nathan, a.k.a. NB Bro.
And thank you for listening to Two Sons of Tatooine.